This is Tom Roy with radio news from Wavefarms WGXC in New York. News about radio waves, transmission art, wireless surveillance, and other broadcast issues from wavefarm.org. David Oxenford from the Broadcast Law blog reports the deadline for filing applications for low-power FM stations has been extended as a result of the federal government shutdown. While the U.S. government and the Federal Communications Commission was shut down from October 1st through 16th, the original filing window began October 15th through October 29th was the original filing window for nonprofit organizations to apply to run low-power FM stations in communities where frequencies are available. The FCC has now extended the deadline through November 14th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. The FCC's application system for filing opened immediately with the government on October 17th, but during the shutdown, the FCC was not available to ask questions, and their website was shut down with the information that one needed to fill out an application. The FCC also had a webinar scheduled for the time during the government shutdown. That has been rescheduled for October 24th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. You can go to the FCC website, fcc.gov, for more information about that. The FCC has also tweaked a number of the rules for low-power FM. It wants to make it clear to LPFM applicants that they have to protect the input signals from existing FM translators. The FCC also announced it is not accepting applications for 10 or 50 watt stations, only 100 watt LPFM stations, to the consternation of some, and has announced a few other minor changes to the program. Go to fcc.gov for complete information and broadcastlawblog.com for more information about the FCC extending the low power FM application window through November 14th. I'm Tom Rowe reporting for Wavefarms WGXC. The U.S. government and the Federal Communications Commission may be reopened, but they're not fully back in business yet. The day after the government shutdown ended and the FCC reopened, Senator Ted Cruz, Republican from Texas, blocked the nomination of Thomas Wheeler for FCC chairman. Julius Genachowski left for a fellowship at the Aspen Institute last spring, and since then, without a chair, the commission is unable to move forward on major initiatives such as broadband expansion and spectrum reallocation. Cruz is blocking Wheeler, he says, quote, until he gets answers to his questions regarding Mr. Wheeler's views on whether the FCC has the authority or intent to implement the requirements of the failed Congressional Disclose Act. Mr. Wheeler had previously declined to give specific answers, but as he's now expressed his readiness to revisit the senator's questions, the senator hopes to communicate with him soon, unquote. The Disclose Act, currently stalled in Congress, would regulate campaign disclosures, according to TechCrunch. You can read more about it at TechCrunch.com. This year marks the 75th anniversary of the War of the Worlds radio broadcast from October 30th, 1938, and the Mercury Theater on the Air and Orson Welles. The radio play was aired over the Columbia Broadcasting System, CBS Radio Network, and was directed and narrated by Orson Welles. The episode was an adaptation of H.G. Wells' novel, The War of the Worlds, from 1898. First two-thirds of the 60-minute broadcast were presented as a series of simulated news bulletins. Wells reportedly played recordings of Herbert Morrison's radio reports of the Hindenburg disaster for actor Frank Riddick and the rest of the cast to demonstrate the kind of mood he wanted.
It's starting to rain again. The rain had cracked up a little bit. The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It bursts into flames.
Get it started. It's crashing terrible. Oh, my. Get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the morning fast. And all the folks between us, this is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's 400 or 500 feet into the sky, and it's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and the flames now, and the flame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the furniture is screaming around it. I can't even talk to people. There's friends are out there. I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen. Honestly, just laying there, a massive smoking wreckage. And everybody can't hardly breathe and talk and scream. Lady, I'm sorry. Honestly, I can hardly breathe. I'm going to step inside while I cannot see it. Charlie, that's terrible. Listen, folks, I'm going to have to stop for a minute because I've lost the voice. This is the worst thing I've ever witnessed.
program's realism succeeded, and immediately there were sensationalist accounts in the press about a supposed panic in response to the War of the Worlds broadcast. The precise extent of that panic has been debated by historians for years, whether it was minimal or as widespread as some report. There definitely was at least some panic that night, and these AT&T telephone operators can attest to that, reporting on what happened when so many people called about the Martian invasion.
Our board lit up when they announced that the Martians were coming across the George Washington Bridge. And that's when the excitement started.
First one is crossing the river. I can see it from here, wading the Hudson like a man wading through a brook. A bulletin is handed me. Martian cylinders are falling all over the country. One outside of Buffalo, one in Chicago, St. Louis. Seem to be timed and spaced. Now the first machine reaches the shore. He stands watching, looking over the city. Steel cowlish head is even with the skyscrapers. He waits for the others. They rise like a line of new towers on the city's west side. Now they're lifting their metal hands. This is the end now.
Some people said, did I have a chance to see them? What were they like? What did they look like?
I figured them little peoples. I don't mean foot tall. Little peoples, green in color with a flowing hood.
Have you seen any Martians?
No. They're going over to New York. Tonight the sky is alive with their lights, just as if people were still living.
Because they were crying and screaming and wanting to know if there was a lot of gas, if there was a lot of destruction, were there fires, is there a lot of shooting, are there bodies all around?
But people believed it. They really believed it that night. And I think of the ones who were begging us to get connections to their families, to their husbands, to mothers and fathers before the world came to an end, so they could just tell them they loved them.
At least 40 people, including 6 state troopers, lie dead in a field east of the village of Grover's Mill.
One man told me that people were jumping out of the windows and they were going to kill their families before the Martians could get them.
You see, it was not a case of answering a light and connecting them to somebody else. All they wanted was the operator.
I was just so concerned that I was going to be able to help all these people. And never a thought of getting out of there because my life was in danger. Because I believe part of it was with the old telephone company training, you are very dedicated to your job. You stayed there through thick or thin.
A bulletin is handed me. Martian cylinders are falling all over the country.
And one lady, probably minutes or many minutes after the onset, said they're as far as Chicago now. And I thought, if they're traveling that fast, they're going to be in Missoula before I get off duty.
This is Orson Welles, ladies and gentlemen, out of character, to assure you that the War of the Worlds has no further significance than as the holiday offering it was intended to be.
Any man that could cause that kind of upheaval in a whole country, from coast to coast, has got to be great.
We were exhausted when it was over with, but I look back now, I wouldn't have missed it for anything.
In 1926, Ronald Knox had a satirical newscast about a riot overtaking London on the British Broadcasting Corporation, which may have influenced Welles. Welles may have also been influenced by Archibald MacLeish dramas The Fall of the City and Air Raid, the former of which had used Welles himself in the role of a live radio news reporter. Here's Welles at a press conference the next day defending his actions and commenting on the widespread panic.
Of our shows were more intensely dramatic. psychological reason back.
I simply don't know. I can't imagine. I mean, you must realize that when I left the broadcast last night, I went into a dress rehearsal for a play that's opening in 2 days, and I've had almost no sleep, and I know less about this than you do. I haven't read the papers except
for the lead. The first thing you had that something was wrong.
After the...
Were you aware of terror at the time you were giving this role? Were you aware that terror was going on throughout the nation?
Oh, no, of course not. We did Dracula, and it seemed to me during Dracula I had high hopes that people would react as they do in a movie of that kind, and I don't know that they did particularly, and so I'd given up. One doesn't believe in the radio audience much. You don't know that they're whether they're listening or not. You have no idea how many people are listening and what they're thinking. I had every hope that... that the people would be excited as they would be at a melodrama. But you don't play down the melodramatic effect of a melodrama.
Have you altered your plans for future problems in any way as a result of this incident?
Naturally, we will have to sit down and think very carefully about future broadcast.
Have you made any specific changes in any programs that were already scheduled, such as next week, for instance?
No.
Mr. Wells,
three short stories.
When you were in the Wells School Bible Patel, when you spoke about rehearsals that you failed to get off, my listening in on this program would know that there was no such thing as Martian.
Well, it would seem to me unlikely that, the people of an invasion from Mars would find ready acceptance. I was frankly terribly shocked to learn that it did. No.
But primarily
I'm primarily the...
Mr. Wells, why did you use local towns in this program?
Well, H.G. Wells uses local towns addressing an English audience. I was addressing an American audience, so the transplantation is quite logical. He doesn't use mythical towns; he uses quite real ones.
That was a mythical town, wasn't it?
It was a mythical town, but it was near enough. It was near enough to a real name. I've forgotten how we figured it out. It's either that it's Grover's Mills, or it is Grove's Mill, or something. At any rate, we changed it slightly, hoping that would. A thing which H.G. Wells did not do. His names are quite real English towns. Without any change, man.
Yes. The camera.
We've asked you that before.
Ask it loud, very loud.
Do you think, Mr. Wells, that you might have taken unfair advantage of the public in using a method as a conveyance for authentic news?
I don't believe that I have since. It is not a method original with me. It is used by many radio programs. I am terribly shocked by the effect it's had. I do not believe that the method is original with me or peculiar to the Mercury Theater's presentation.
Do you think there ought to be a law against such enactments as we had last night or as a result of that?
I don't know what the legislation would be. I know that almost everybody in radio would do almost anything to avert the kind of thing that has happened, myself included, but I don't know what the legislation would be. We simply, radio is new and we are learning about the effect it has on people. Learned a terrible lesson.
Do you think that this will cause the curbing of radio bulletins on the air today?
I simply can't imagine. It seems to me that the effects of this may cause much legislation. I simply don't know. The wisdom of radio executives and of an organized public will decide these things for us. Well, it's not up to me to speak. I'm the accused.
I was in Europe at the time that Schuschnigg was murdered, and I remember very vividly the time, the way that came through the air. I should say that your presentation last night was even more dramatic and more realistic than the way the Vienna radio station did theirs.
Yes, the intention...
In view of that, don't you think that somebody here would have been able to gauge the reaction which in fact has occurred throughout the United States?
Well, every radio program tries to be more dramatic than life, as every play tries to be more dramatic than life, and every movie, not less so. I would have been surprised if and hurt as anybody would if they'd been told that a presentation was less effective than life. It might be.
Your own view is
quiet. Do you want me to speak now? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Of course, we are deeply shocked and deeply regretful about the results of last night's broadcast. The date of the broadcast, was 1939, and it seemed, came rather as a great surprise to us that a story, the fine H.G. Wells classic fantasy, the original for so many succeeding comic strips and adventure stories and novels, about a mythical invasion by monsters from the planet Mars, should have had so profound an effect upon radio listeners. The date of the broadcast was clearly stated as being 1939. Came, of course, as a great shock to us that the old H.G. Wells fantasy, the classic original for so many adventure stories, romances, and even comic strips, should have so profound an effect upon radio listeners. The invasion by mythical monsters from the planet Mars seemed to us to be clearly in the realm of the fairy tale. Deeply regretful that this is not so.
Shortly after the broadcast, H.G. Wells, the author of the original story, came to America and spent time in front of a microphone with Orson Welles. Here are those results.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Charles C. Shaw speaking. KTSA is honored this evening by the presence in our studios of two great men, the Honorable H.G. Wells, world-famous British historian, author, and student of world affairs, and Mr. Orson Welles, the genius of stage, screen, and radio. This is the first time that Mr. H.G. Wells and Mr. Orson Welles have appeared together. In fact, they met for the first time only yesterday here in San Antonio. But this is not the first time that their names have been linked. 2 years ago, Mr. Orson Welles adapted Mr. H.G. Wells' book, War of the Worlds, for radio purposes, and you know the rest. Revising the story somewhat, Mr. Orson Welles depicted an invasion of the United States by men from Mars. Although he explained it numerous times during the program that it was fictitious, the country at large was frightened almost out of its wits. Men called radio stations offering to enlist against the Martians. Others were panic-stricken. The realism of the production, frightening though it was a tribute to Mr. Orson Welles' genius. And thus the name of Wells, H.G.W.E.L.L.S., and Orson W.E.L.L.E.S., became linked. Mr. H.G. Wells, in the opinion of many, is the world's most famous man of letters. He has come to San Antonio to address the United States Brewers Association, and Mr. Orson Welles is here for a town hall forum address Wednesday. In this meeting of great minds, I feel rather inconspicuous, and the less I have to say, the better you listeners will like it. But first, could I interest you gentlemen in a discussion of Mr. Orson Welles' broadcast of Mr. H.G. Wells' book, The War of the Worlds?
Are you turning the meeting over to us, sir?
I am, for the moment.
He's turning it over to us. Well, I've had a series of the most delightful experiences since I came to America. But the best thing that has happened so far is meeting my little namesake here, Orson. I find him the most delightful carrier. He carries my name and an extra E that I hope he'll drop sooner or later. See no sense in it. And I've known his work before he made this sensational Halloween spree. Are you sure there was such a panic in America, or wasn't it your Halloween fun?
I think that's the nicest thing that a man from England could possibly say about the men from Mars. Mr. Hitler made a good deal of sport of it, you know, and actually spoke of it in the great Munich speech, you know. Mm. And there were floats in Nazi parades.
Much else to say.
That's right. Not much else to say. And it's supposed to show the corrupt condition and decadent state of affairs in democracies that the War of the Worlds went over as well as it did. I think it's very nice of Mr. Wells to say that Not only I didn't mean it, but the American people didn't mean it.
That was our impression in England. We had articles about it, and people said, have you never heard of Halloween in America when everybody pretends to see ghosts?
Well, there was some excitement caused. I really can't belittle the amount that was caused, but I think that the people got over it very quickly, don't you?
What kind of excitement? Mr. H.G. Wells wants to know if the excitement wasn't the same kind of excitement that we extract from a practical joke in which somebody puts a sheet over his head and says, boo, I don't think anybody believes that that individual is a ghost, but we do scream and yell and rush down the hall. Mm-hmm. And that's just about what happened.
That's a very excellent description.
You aren't quite serious in America yet. You haven't got the war right under your chins. And the consequence is you can still play with ideas of terror and conflict.
You think that's good or bad?
It's a natural thing to do until you're right up against it.
So it ceases to be a game.
And then it ceases to be a game.
Now, here's a thought. Some of Mr. H.G. Wells' writings are termed fantastic, and a few years ago, well might they have been conceived such. The Shape of Things to Come, which told of a long internecine war, was such a fantasy. But, Mr. Orson Welles, do you think that it's so fantastic in view of today's events?
It certainly is not so fantastic, and the one question that Mr. Wells has spoken of, not only in The Shape of Things to Come, but has hinted at or directly prophesied such a state of affairs following a wasting war and a return to a feudalism from which the world would find itself again. And today in Mr. Wells's lecture, he said quite the most interesting thing that I've heard in a long time. He said that he'd commenced just recently to ask himself if there was any reason why mankind should so emulate the phoenix and should so get itself out of its mess. He proposed a couple of solutions, but he did admit that there was a possible excuse for a gloomy point of view, mm-hmm. and that it would be good to be realistic about it and not to dismiss the gloomy point of view anymore. Perhaps the time had come to look ahead, since the future, Mr. Wells' future, which we've always adored and never really understood, is suddenly upon us.
Mm-hmm.
And we are living right now in that famous H.G. Wells future, which we all knew about.
Now, before we get away from this microphone, tell me about this film of yours that you've been producing. You're a producer, aren't you? You're
That's right.
Art director, you're everything.
Well, Mr. Wells...
What's the film called?
It's called Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane, yes. Not C-A-I-N.
No, K-A-N-E. And this
Kane.
Is, of course, the kindest and most gracious possible thing to do. Mr. Wells is making it possible for me to do what in America is spoken of as a plug. And he understands the fine old American
I don't custom. Understand these words, yes.
You understand the value, however. Mr. Wells wants me to tell you that I have made a motion picture, and he is kind enough to ask me a leading question concerning it.
I'm looking forward to it.
You're very kind, sir. It's a new sort of motion picture with a new method of presentation and a few new technical experiments, a few new methods of telling a picture, not only from the point of view of writing, but of showing it.
If I don't misunderstand you completely, I think there'll be a lot of jolly good new noises in it. What do you think?
I hope so. I mean, a few jolly good new noises are what the motion pictures could well afford these days. I hope you're right, and I hope there are some jolly good new noises.
But I know how to handle him. Like the time his wife left him.
Thank you. Rosebud.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.